Ready? Okay, do you want to hear a joke? This flood and Walter is sitting in his house. The flood is raising. The helicopter comes, drops the rope and screams to Walter, "Walter, Walter, grab the rope. The water is raising. Walter!" Walter screams back, "Don't worry, just go. God will save me." The water is raising. Walter is sitting on the top of the roof by now. The water is up to his nose. The helicopter comes. "Walter, Walter, grab the rope. Don't worry, God will save me." Then he drowns, goes to heaven, gets really angry, screams at God saying, I who believe at you all my life, one simple thing, I mean, you couldn't even save me." And God says, "Go to hell. I sent the helicopter twice."
Ways to go.
I'm getting very tired.
You need to be here early too, you know.
Oh, it could have been hotter. Yeah. Well, we might as well go. We'll go a few minutes early. We're driving now through the crematorium gardens, which you can see are nicely laid out, well cared for. And the crematorium has over 7,000 roses. And it's a very nice time of the year to come.
We can't hear. Go back.
Sorry.
There's a really loud thing at the back. We can't hear.
What's going on?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Lee, and I've been with the company for 17 years. And if you're wondering whether I've got a pre-arrangement, I can tell you no, I haven't got a pre-arrangement. Because if I die on the job, I'll get a free service anyway. The pay now and die later scheme. Die much, much later. And the idea is that you pre-arrange the whole thing. You decide what you want. And your options are so open these days.
Do you have a pre-arrangement?
I left that open so you could have a look at what a coffin looks like inside. These are the more expensive models, and they come usually with an inner spring mattress in them. They like to keep everyone very comfortable. But no complaints.
You don't have to have black cars. You can have white cars and white ladies for that matter. You can have grey cars. You can have services in churches in the traditional way. You can have a service in a park or in your home if you wish.
How about that?
Yeah, better.
Ah, well, I was working this morning. Anyhow, the crematorium gardens, which you can see all around you. And as we come along here, we should tell you that this is the largest open space in Sydney. If you were to put the whole of the cemetery over the city of Sydney, it would stretch from Circular Quay to Central Railway.
Curving paths, waterfalls, canals, bridges, architectural follies. If people want, if they have it in their mind that a cemetery should be plain, ordinary, basically short backs and sides, well, Rookwood has that. If they want a cemetery that's more romantic, Rookwood also has that. If they want a cemetery with very strong ethnic characteristics, Rookwood has that too.
Curry Family Vault. Attico Family Vault. Curro. Family Vault of Salvatore Strati, Giovannina, Escaruso and Family, Taranto Family Vault, Castorina Family Vault, R and A Grotto Family Vault, Simon J. Simon Family Vault, Abood Family Vault, Hannah Family Vault, Houses of the Dead.
And it's very fascinating when you walk through the whole place and see the differences in different religions and different approaches, and of course then showing how far they have yet been able to establish in Australia, or what kind of people would have come because of the wealth they can show through their display of their remembering their death. But looking at some of these, could be over $100,000 to build one.
The rows between the family vaults are no bigger than a backyard street in the slums. Paved to the door, crowded on a slope, like a suburb of its own. The names are mostly Italian, Jewish, English, French, where visitors come on weekends with lit candles and a broom to ensure a memory survives.
I suppose that the name Necropolis somehow seems to be fits this particular avenue, is the city of the dead. I personally find that it's just overpowering, and somehow, I don't know, it's trying to go against the idea of death by making the monument so permanent. It's somehow they don't want to accept the idea that these people have gone. And I don't know, some other people who have a much more simpler arrangement around the grave, and even you see little tables and old chairs that they would have been in the shed, they bring and put along the graves. And I remember seeing people having a birthday celebration next to one of these. It seemed much more joyful, much more, although they somehow remembering us having making some contact with that dead person, probably of an older generation, the grandma or someone like that, they come and seem to have this contact. And it seemed to be, I don't know, makes more sense to me personally than this idea of monument.
Polish headstones. No white eagle hands in the air, and no black Madonna in a shrine of birches. A row of prunus, bottle brush palms, a white chain fence enclose emblems of belief and the end of life's migration. Silver crucifix, rosary beads, a broken candle set behind glass with niches of polished granite. Here, in the western suburbs of their final rest. Tu spoczywa, w Bogu, spokój jego duszy, na zawsze w pamięci. Again and again, I pause, stumbling over consonants, repeating the infinite conjugation of a verb that suggests the boundaries of eternity.
Gypsy graves are over here where all those crosses are, those red granite crosses.
This is a lovely section, lots of flowers.
See this Costa Stereo, yes. Or Stereo, whatever. He was the prince.
Prince of the Gypsies.
He was Mary's son, and he was the prince. And Mary is right behind him here. As you can see on her headstone, she's got Queen. Mary Stereo, Queen.
And her death was in
1947. You can see all stereos, and how many are we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, we got about 15 or 16 of them. There's all the beer bottles that they put on the graves. The Coca-Cola bottles. I can't see no whiskey. But they do.
And they've got their lids off, but they've got the liquid inside.
Yes, here.
Refreshment.
I have seen this literally covered with fruit and other biscuits and things like this, so there must be a special day when they put all that on, but There's always flowers, and this one.
They're beautifully maintained, these ones.
This was Ruby. This was the one from Wollongong who laid in state in Wollongong.
And there's a photograph of her.
A photograph of her and her husband.
And she was born in Canada.
Yes.
In 1916 and died March 1982.
And gypsies are pretty well known for being nomads, aren't they, you know, so...
Here's Rachel Annie Stereo, born in the USA in 1906, died 1980.
Yes, and...
And Laura Stereo Adams, born in Canada.
Where Ruby was, so they could well have been sisters, eh? So that's this is the gypsies, and...
Do you know why they do leave the beer and the Coca-Cola?
No, I don't, to be quite honest. It's probably some custom, whereas they may believe in the spirit comes and needs refreshments, I don't know.
Colonial graves.
We go back down this way, there's an interesting grave down here. Ledger was his name, a fella called Ledger. You probably never heard of him, but...
Overgrown with moss, beliefs and prophecies lie revealed on reeves and granite blocks. Abide in me, as your mercy. The day of the Lord cometh as a thief in the night.
Night in the necropolis.
Only having been born in Lidcombe here, not far from the cemetery, as a child, the cemetery for all the children around here was their backyard. They never regarded it as anything to be afraid of. And, you know, coming through your life, it was a place to hold your parties of a night time too, you know. And, of course, it's been used for many things, the cemetery, apart from the obvious.
I live in the grounds, along with a number of other managers. We're all about almost a kilometre apart within these enormous grounds. Although being a big open space at night, the sound travels right across. Quite a lot of night birds are here too, so there's quite a lot of chirping and that sort of thing going on at night.
And there's been two-up schools in the cemetery, you know, and they were quite famous two-up schools in the early days. There was a trotting track where they used to train their horses, and all the little rest houses, and especially the railway station, the mortuary station over here, was held for parties amongst the young people.
We often, moving around in the cemetery at night, you often see rabbits and possums.
It was a lover's lane, and I know full well in the railway station over here, the benches that were in there, if you were bringing a girl up into the station, you want to be early because they'd be all gone. You couldn't have got a seat there. So then you went around looking for all the other rest houses. There were plenty of them.
In traditional ethnic circles, lighting a small flame on the grave is a common practice. At night, you'll see them flickering away.
There was a factory over here called Sterling Henry's, and there was this girl and this fellow called Norman. He'd really had gone overboard for this girl, and she didn't worry him at all, see? So some of the fellas over there, they conned this girl, saying she would go out with this Norman if he would come into the cemetery, plant this, whatever it was, on this particular grave, and then if they would find out the next day or whatever it was on, she would go out with him.
He was petrified of cemeteries, in so much some of them used to drive their cars, the Stirling Henrys, to work, because it was shift work at that time, they'd come through the cemetery. And he would never take a ride with them. He'd always go by train. That's how petrified he was. And that's why they devised this scheme that she would go out with him if he was going to do this. You know, he apparently plucked up all his courage this night. It was a Friday night, actually. And he came into the cemetery with this, whatever it was, some object where he had to, they get identified. And it was a windy night or cold night or something. And his coat got caught on a tree. And when he tried to move and he couldn't move, he had a heart attack or whatever. And he died. He died.
How sudden was the death of me? A great surprise to all.
Never any ghosts?
No, we haven't seen a ghost, and I don't expect we ever will. Everybody here is sleeping peacefully.
Epitaphio.
In memory of Louisa Lawson, daughter of Henry and Henriette Aubrey, wife of Peter, mother of Henry Charles Peter Gertrude and Annette, pioneer of women's suffrage, 1848 to 1920.
Rookwood has around about 350,000 to 400,000 headstones, marking some 600,000 graves. In addition to that, on those headstones are over 1 million epitaphs. What those epitaphs say is often the most visible and certainly the most accessible record of that person's life. When you look at epitaphs in a historic cemetery like Rookwood, you soon realise that the whole place is a social tapestry.
Maxie Papworth, who was born a champion, lived a champion, died a champion. The leading Sydney apprentice jockey who died through injuries accidentally received at Randwick. Age 15 years.
Charles Goodlife Jones,
be ready, mates,
who died through injuries received by the falling down of the Prince of Wales Theatre.
Stanley,
the
22nd
year of his life,
who was killed
by his affectionate sister
on his way to school,
the 20th of January 1872. Hannah Maddow, our mother, maiden name Hannah Elizabeth Cook, descendant of Captain James Cook.
Electrocuted while climbing. 22nd of December. Aged 12 years.
Florence Open Salmon, nurse, 2nd AIF. Lost, Banka Island.
In memory of William Vile, who saved the life of His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh at Clontarf.
Jane Douglas Finlay, 4 months, 4 days. Walter S. Finlay, 6 months, 19 days. All dead as H. Finlay. 3 years, 2 months. Sydney, C. Finlay. 10 months, 7 days. Jesse A. Finlay. 6 months, 9 days. Emma H. Finlay. Finlay. Mother of the above. 28 August, 1976. 39 years. William Finlay. 1 day. 29th of August, 1876.
You see, as you go around, you come across so many different headstones that bring stories to mind. There's one here, and I just can't remember the name offhand, but a fella called Travis wrote a story about murder in the Blue Mountains. A fella called Preston used to advertise for people to go prospecting with him. Then he'd kill them. And they never found him for a while. I think he eventually went to America, but they brought him back. And he's buried here. Butler and Preston was the name. One of his victims, or he himself, is buried here.
No headstone?
Yep, there's a headstone. Mm-hmm. But I just can't bring it to mind where it is here.
Hibiscus blaze as the stained glass portals along a wall of green pines. Moss clings to bark, burial urns, blackened headstones, in the shape of cathedral spires.
Yes.
Freesias raise their white trumpets from a shroud of brown grass.
As you can read, Arthur Thomas Osborne, son of Arthur and Esther Preston of Brisbane, Sydney University student in mineralogy, who was brutally shot while out taking field lesson at Linden near Penrith, New South Wales, October 22nd, 1896, aged 20 years. His stone was erected by many friends and sympathisers in New South Wales and Queensland. So it was Butler was the fellow who used to lure him up to go prospecting with him, and then he'd shoot him. And
I say, any other famous crimes connected with the graves in this section?
Not in this particular section. That was an older one, but further down here there's a John Rellis. John Rellis was murdered.
No one bothers you. Time won't ask questions.
The Journey.
The magic of green hills and stone bridges, legends, songs, an indomitable will to survive, drifts behind the stern of a ship long since forging through eternity's winds and sleet. Rose O'Hagan, James Donovan, Patrick Corcoran.
Somebody's having a tour. I don't know who they are.
They're putting a plaque on.
Oh, they're putting a plaque on. Thank you. Yes, I couldn't see that. Yeah.
A man who wrote the history of something or other, and he had no memorial, so he died about 100 years ago or so, and anyway, they're putting a plaque on his grave.
Oh, that's interesting. Good on them. Over on the left here, you see the sandstone monument with the marble pieces. That's the monument of the Miles family. B. Miles was its most famous member. And is B. Miles known to all of you?
Yes.
Yeah. I met her.
And I think a lot of people met her.
Oh, when she was in a nursing home. She was died in the Little Sisters of the Poor at Randwick.
Yeah.
Tanner Street?
Yes.
If anybody who don't remember B, well, B was noted for jumping into taxi cabs or any sort of vehicles, trams, and then just wouldn't get out.
Cavill Town, the Brownies to the Cavill Town, take the Cavill Town, all right?
And it used to be quite comical at old Beverfull's Corner when B would lurk in the shadows of the buildings and the taxis would pull up, and then when B would make a dash for one of the cabs, and yet the cabbies, to see the cabbies going for the locks, bang, 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 they're trying to get the locks all down. And eventually she'd get into one, and that'd be it. There'd be no way in the world they could get B out. And that was their problem, and they'd drive to the police station or whatever. But before I was married, my wife came from Maroubra, and I used to catch a cab then from Maroubra to the station for a train home. And I got in the cab one night, and B's in the back, and I said to the driver, "Oh, you got B with you?" And he says, "Yeah," he says, "he's been with me all night." I said, "Can't get her out?" He said, "No, no, I'm not trying." He says, "I'm just going about my own business, and she'll get out when she wants to." So that was what B was like, you know. And so it was quite a surprise to me when B landed up here in the office, and I was able to have a bit of a talk with her, and that I couldn't converse very well with her. But she knew what she was talking about, but I didn't know what she was talking about. And I used to take her over to her grave. And, the taxi driver, he told me about the time he took her from Sydney to Perth. And that's not a bad taxi run, is it, you know? And she paid the money and everything like that. So that's B. She's one of the characters who I have seen here during my time here.
Have you got the transcription of what's on her?
No, I don't. Yeah, reading. I have read it, but I don't have it with me at the moment.
This
is the general section, and that little pagoda-like structure of the building is a Chinese memorial shrine, which was built in 1877.
This is B around here. It's under the ashes, as I said.
Here were scattered the ashes of B. Miles, 1902, 1973, who loved Australia. Reason thus with life. If I do lose thee, I do lose a thing that none but fools would keep.
Probably a quote from Shakespeare.
She was fond of quoting Shakespeare, wasn't she?
Yes. You might notice the way they have it spelt there, B-double-E, and in a lot of the write-ups it's B-E-A, and there's been a bit of controversy as to what it was.
And so also buried there is Helen, who must have been...
Her sister,
who died... Yes, who died at some months of...
Being born.
Being born.
Mm.
And, the parents are also
yes,
here?
Yes, they're here too. Mm.
Let's see, perhaps there's their side. She used to come and worry about where their graves were.
Yes, she used to come.
Did she not know where they were?
She used to, and then she'd get lost and wouldn't know where they were, you know. She'd wouldn't come every day, every... Watch yourself there.
Yes. So there are actually six family members here.
There would be, yes. You can see it's a rather large grave, yes.
It's like a little temple or a house or something, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Columns and a roof.
That'd be symbolic, but I just can't tell you myself what it's symbolic of.
We are nothing but links in a chain.
So if we walk up here, we'll see John Fairfax's grave and some of the other more notable ones.
A vase-shaped monument with a grey inscription. Christ, the fountain of living waters. A pair of green frogs croak on a lily pad's back. Around me the silence of cemetery and suburbs comes down like a canopy of eyes.
The graveyard gate.
It must have been about 2 years ago when I was approached to think about doing a piece for this new gateway here in Rookwood Cemetery. And my first reaction was I wasn't sure would I like to work in such a situation. And one of the immediate concerns I had to how to make the work to become part of the landscaping. And then the idea of the nature of this place being a cemetery. And the second from that was the variety of religions and the people who were buried there and the kind of traditions they came from and the imagery that they introduced to the place. As you have walked around, you've seen the just magnificent examples of different craftsmanship and different attitudes towards burial and so on. And all these were quite overwhelming.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if I could ask you, to just, if I could ask you to just give us a moment, and I'll ask Commissioner John Gowans, please, to come forward and to pray a prayer of dedication on these gates. This is a necropolis that is consisting mainly of church trusts, and we feel it appropriate that there should be a dedicatory prayer representing all of the churches that are involved in these in this necropolis. And so I'm going to ask the Commissioner now if he would pray for us, please.
Let's pray together. O God and Father of us all, as we stand in your presence, we ask ourselves the question asked by the poet of old, what is man that thou art mindful of him? We feel so small and insignificant in your presence, and yet your love for us is declared to all the world, and we praise you and thank you for your care of your people. We dedicate now in your presence these gates to your honour and glory, asking your blessing upon all who have dedicated their intelligence, their energy, their imagination, their gifts of hand and eye to the beautification of this place. And we ask it in your name and for your glory. Amen.
Now we're going to ask the minister to unveil the plaques. There's two here and there is one over there. We'll just leave it to the minister to do his.
Commissioner Gowans, representing the religious denominations, Major Donovan and Mr. Dabbagee. And ladies and gentlemen, it's my honour on your behalf, your collective behalf, to now unveil the plaques that will officially open the commemorative gates at the Rookwood Cemetery. And we have a third one as well.
In that sense, I went against that idea of taking examples from the existing place, but go to something very simple that did not try to compete with this existing examples of fine craft and art within the graveyard.
Ladies and gentlemen, this plaque is a plaque in dedication of the artist. Pleasure, Major Donovan. Pleasure.
And that's why the image you see, it's fairly simple. At the same time, the other challenge was trying to make an image that somehow was not so concrete in it, in what was trying to convey, but maybe will be like a question mark or a quotation that could be interpreted in different ways by different people That means people who pass through here are from many different cultures, many different religions, and to be able to offer something that can be read in such a short time that they will be driving by, to have some image or some sort of understanding of the image I was trying to show here.
A stairway to heaven.
Using the fence, I decided to have the structure of the steps, that is the main element in the work, passing through the fence to go to the inside of the graveyard. In that sense, it's maybe metaphorically, I'm talking about a journey that happens from this side to that side. But again, when you look at the work, there is no beginning to the steps, or I pretend not to be a beginning to the step or an end. But this is just a hovering set of steps that come from a lower situation to a higher situation, that is hovering between this fence, that is the maybe the transition between life and death. And within the fence, I've used this other element, that is a curb, concentric circles. Maybe for me was looking back, returning to the earth, and where one may think the life began. But talking to different people while I was working, the workers and people were passing through, they all reading it in a different ways, and they kind of at times were happy that there was nothing, they could not see a definite finish to that step, where it's going, and at times they were disappointed because they thought it should go to heaven. But again, that emptiness, it could be heaven if you want to see it that way. And some other people said, oh, these steps should be going right down into the earth, as it were, going down in a lower level, because they thought some people don't deserve to be going up all the time. And it's kind of different readings like that. But overall, they have understood the idea of the journey.
As in life.
This afternoon, ladies and gentlemen and brothers, we're here assembled to inter the mortal remains of our very good brother, and he has been outstanding in his work for the order, and he has never been known to do harm to any man or woman but the general public. And it is our sorrow that there are no members of his family be present to hear his funeral rites.
This is giving an idea of human nature, truly. There was a chap, people might remember this, I don't know, he was found dead in a cave at Turramurraway somewhere, and he used to live in this cave, and the council used to turn a blind eye to him living in there. So when he did die, he had no money, and he'd been dead for quite some time, a month or 2 months or something, and anyway, the funeral director who had the job to do, he knew he had no money, but the media, they beat it up a fair bit, and there was supposed to be money found in the cave, you know, where he'd been hoarding it and everything like that. So anyway, at destitute funerals, you seldom get anybody there, and unless it's somebody who, he might have a few mates of his pub and the whole pub might come up, or then, but 9 times out of 10 there'd be nobody at all. So this fella who's found in the cave, this old chap, the day of the funeral, people start to arrive around about the 9:30, and the funeral wasn't until about 11, and I thought, how many people are coming to this? You know, eventually there must have been about 30 or 40 people there, and they'd come from some had come from the mountains, some had come from the Central Coast, and some around here. And do you know what? Those people came down
because they thought this fella had money. What was read in the paper.
He whose lips now echo these words of solemn warning, and you who are gathered here will, ere long, have to cross Death's dark river and stand in the presence of the judge.
So this funeral conductor, I forget his name, I've got it in here, but I just forget his name. I think his name was Bob, I think. So just say anyway, Bob. And Bob came over to me and he said, look at all these people. I went up to have a look, see, and he says, they're all after his money and there's none. I said, yeah, that's the feeling I got, because they said, they kept on saying, well, I was his grandniece or I was his something. So no, Bob did. Bob said, well, Murphy, he says, you listen to this. He said, because under the law, if there is relatives, they are duty bound to pick up the tab. So Bob went in amongst them and he said, look, he says, some of you people are relatives of this chap. They said, one or two spoke up and said, yes. And he said, well, look, I must inform you, he says, that this is a destitute funeral. And could I have your names? Because we will need the money from the relatives for the burial and that. I kid you not, they were gone and just stepping back step by step and they just disappeared. I've never seen anything like that before. That was a lesson to me, you know. And what people will do. And the guy had nothing.
Is that all? Or is there more to come?
The cremation. You're going to love this.
Sorry?
You're going to love this part.
This is where all the famous questions come out.
Usually, yes.
Yes.
Ashes to ashes.
I'll just wait for everyone to catch up before I start the next meeting. As I mentioned, when those curtains close, it's this beacon here that activates. Now, Baden is one of our cremation operators. Baden, once he knows that, will start watching the video monitor, which is around the corner there. When he has seen that the chapel has all everyone that's attended the service has left the chapel, then he'll open these doors and then take this coffin from this particular chapel and put it on a loading trolley. Now, if you like, Bane's about to open one of the insertion doors and you'll get an idea of what the inside of the cremation looks like. What's this running at now?
870.
So this is now running at 870 degrees Celsius. And this is about the average temperature. They will run up to 1,000 degrees. Any precious metals that are on the body at the time, at those temperatures, a large portion of them are vaporised. We certainly don't find anything recoverable. So normally, again, the funeral director, when it's a cremation that's being organised, will always ask the family to take all the valuables with them and not leave them on the body, unless there's a special request, whether it be for tradition or otherwise. Right. Yeah. You see what I mean? You don't have much time to stand around the entrance. All you want to do is insert the casket and then close the door. See what I mean? The bricks are glowing now at that sort of temperature range. Yeah. As you can also see, it's a flat tile surface that allows us to remove as much of the cremated remains as possible when we break them out. All right, now the bone, that's what I'm showing you next.
With the ashes.
Yeah, you have to wait till it cools. How long does it take to cool down for you?
The cremation itself took around an hour and a quarter for the average size person. Someone my size and bigger, like these gentlemen, we're going to take an hour and a half at least. Most ladies and smaller people will take a bit less time. If the person, for example, came from the university, then they're usually frozen. If they've been used for medical research, they'll also take longer. But what's involved with the cremation process is after the coffin burns, all the water has to be liberated out of the body. As the water, or the amount of water in the mass drops, which is about 70%, then all the tissues start to burn. The densest organs, the brain, the heart, the liver, and they're the main ones, they take the longest to burn because of the how dense the tissue is and how much water they retain.
Is that noise? Is that just the reheating?
That's the flame.
Is that gas?
These are all boiled fired. There's also electric and gas cremators, but because our crematorium is so far inside of the cemetery, they're all oiled fired.
The original ones were cake.
The average a day is around 8 to 15 cremations for Brookwood. Some crematoriums like Northern will average between 20 and 42 cremations a day. Now, Baden's got the flame on inside, he's just raising the temperature again. Because while that door was open, it had dropped nearly 100 degrees inside. Now, if you want to have a look from this end, this is the end that we would break down from. Using these steel ropes. That's because of the different size of the person. That's right. So somebody your size would, say, half fill a container. Someone my size is about 3/4 full. Someone around 28 stone or someone over 6'4" and big frame would fill a container. A child would just cover the bottom of the container. For that reason, we put them in a smaller container, a different size. And if the family want to collect them, we always keep the nameplate of the little coffin that the baby would come in and give that to the family, and there's no charge.
The remains are quite different. You said something earlier about men and women being a bit different.
Men's bones being a heavier bone structure, they don't break up as easily. So usually the particles are larger. Women tend to break up more easily. Probably because men traditionally usually have higher calcium content in their bones than women. That's right. I'm surmising. No one has actually put that in writing. That's just what we've noticed from over time and experience. If there aren't any more questions, I'll take you outside next round.
Dust to dust.
Let us pray. Bless this grave and send your angel to watch over it. Forgive the sins of our brother whose body we bury here. Grant that he may sleep here in peace until you awaken him to glory. We commit his body to the earth, for we are dust, and unto dust we shall return. But the Lord Jesus Christ will change our mortal bodies to be like his in glory. So let us commend our brother to the Lord, that the Lord may embrace him in peace and raise up his body on the last day.
Who's predestined for a fate different to this? Ordained for a light that reveals only another darkness? Echoes of Genesis, the Psalms, Ecclesiastes sway in unison with the wind and the song of nameless birds.
Eternal rest grant unto him, O Lord.
And let the perpetual light shine upon him.
May he rest in peace.
Amen.
May his soul and the souls of all the faithful departed, to the mercy of God, rest in peace. Amen. Go in peace to love and serve the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Brother's going to take over for a while now. I'm not going to stay because I know what a terrible voice he's got. He's going to start singing.
You want to gather around closer? We're going to terminate by singing...
Home on the run.
Just prime us up. What are the early words?
That's the
chorus, isn't it?
Give me a home.
Right.
Give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are all cloudy away. Oh.
Thank you very much for those, especially within the last last.
It shows how varied a bunch of people we are here in Australia. And in a sense, as we live together, hopefully we'll be able to die together in a sort of a coming together in this way. As maybe this would be a way of people realizing that we, in the end, we all end up with the same journey. And hopefully that will awaken people while they're alive to be able to respect each other in the actual life itself.
Nothing to be afraid of.
Well, I've had people come in and say, how can you work here? How can you possibly work here? And we try to say, well, what would be more acceptable? Working here where you have the sun, the birds, the trees, you have everything. And I said, in the main, these people here, they were all good people. They weren't, if they were alive today, they'd be friends with you and everything like this. And I said, well, would you rather be cooped up in that office in town and you don't know whether it's raining or sun's shining or whatever? And sometimes you can send them away with a different point of view, you know, because especially when, say, the cockatoos come or the little wrens and so forth. And we have our changing patterns in every season. We have our yellow flowers, we have our freesias, we have our watsonias, and we have our agapanthers. They all come up in on cue, and we got hundreds and thousands of them, you know, and the people come in, they say, oh, don't you get worried? There's nothing to worry about. There's not a thing to worry about, really.
Passing through to the other side. Is it worry you're doing this kind of work?
Ah, he's used to it. We've got the easy part.
What's the hard part?
Picking them up.
How do people feel when you tell them you do this kind of work?
Oh, they don't normally worry about it. Someone's got a door.
Is it interesting? Do you meet interesting people doing it?
No, usually the people don't talk to you. It's a good job till it rains.
I look at what they carried. Water, flowers, and other signs of life. A white patriarchal cross rose out of the stone's heart.
Broken urn, rusted spear shafts, obelisk, the life-size angel with a cross. Silent witnesses above the signature of water, where bricks and mortar set a seal upon covenants of discovery and loss.
This big one here of James Pillar. As you can see, he, if you read the inscription, he was the founder of the Unitarian Church.
It's a very grand one, isn't it?
It is. And as you can see, unfortunately, he fell from the rocks at Bondi or near Bondi and was killed or drowned.
and was erected by his congregation.
His grave was the ocean, it says.
Mm. But around this side is you notice there's the torch, and there's a hand reaching out to take it, or a hand has just taken that torch. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the readings of Peter and Paul for Timothy in the Bible. Well, there is a passage that says, I have ran the race to the end, I have fought the good fight, all that is left now is my reward at the right hand of God. I think this is the way it goes, something like that. And you're more or less, he's handing over the torch, and I believe it's symbolic of the Olympics too, you know, where you're handing over the torch, and now all that's left is the crown of righteousness at the right hand side of God. And just here you see the crown. That's the crown of righteousness.
Reverend Nathaniel Pidgeon.
Yes, we'll see. As I said, everywhere you walk, there is people who are so well known. Now, I didn't bring you here to show you Nathaniel Pidgeon, but he was the founder of the Sydney City Mission, which is still going today. And so you see all these things and...
You know who's here.
Well, you do. As I say, it's just like the tools of trade. There's that broken column I was talking about. That was a child. Further down there, you'll see the dove, which is peace. Further down still, you'll see the little cherub with the wings. And so many of the... There's the ivy, you cling to life. And I can't see the anchor of hope here, but... But they're all here. They're all here.
Mother of Christ, Star of the Sea, pray for the wanderer, pray for me.
Facing the east, one epitaph overshadows the hill's slope, with an inscription common to all faiths. As for man, his days are as grass, as a flower of the field, so he flourisheth. For the wind passeth over it, and it is gone, and the place thereof shall know it no more.
Here. Yeah. In the western suburbs of the final rest.
There you are, there's the city for you. Right dead ahead. And Chatswood to the left. It's interesting, isn't it? You think you've gone out west and you wouldn't be able to see these things.